Welcome to Women on the Line, one of Community Radio's National Feminist Current Affairs programs, produced by women and gender diverse broadcasters at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne on unceded Kulin lands and broadcasted nationally on the Community Radio Network. I'm your host, Senya. On today's show, we speak with Lana Wing, who is an independent curator, arts worker and cultural organizer on projects that engage with the politics of place. Lana is one half, alongside Aliki Reid, behind A Climate for Art, a campaign that unites the arts around the issues of our changing climate through divestment practices and community building. Recently, A Climate for Art held a symposium in NAM, bringing together arts organizations, climate action organizations, and arts workers over 2 days of time and space to learn from each other. We chat with Lana about how the campaign has been progressing and the ecosystem of the arts in relation to climate change. We then hear a snippet from Market Forces, represented by Munira Chowdhury and Rachel Deans, who presented on targeting finance as a successful action to block fossil fuel investments. Let's first hear from Lana.
Hi, I'm Lana Nguyen. I am one half of A Climate for Art. And yeah, I'm based on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country. And yeah, come with lots of relationships to different places and people, but lots of lineages to Vietnam and England and Scotland.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. So Lana, you and your co-instigator Aliki Reid started A Climate for Art in 2023. Can you please share with our listeners what brought you two together for this initiative and what's the story behind A Climate for Art?
Yeah, we started working together. We both met at Footscray Community Art, so I guess we were both situated in the arts in a particular way. That place is a very special breeding ground for, I guess it started in the 70s and was really about like art from perspectives that weren't being heard at the time, very working class, and it was sort of out of the 70s, like community art movement as well. So I guess we were in the same political framework, and yeah, it's a really meaningful area for lots of like refugee and migrant communities. And we did a program together through Theatre Network Australia called Power Play that was looking at advocacy in the arts sector and sort of looking at theory of change models. And at the end of it, while we didn't have to do a project, I went up to Aliki and was like, hey, do you want to do this thing with me? Like, I'd worked in divestment campaigns in university and was like sort of part of the ragtag activist groups that would come to different, you know, protests and things like that. And Aliki had worked with Pacific Climate Warriors, so it was something that we both really cared about. Like, the environment was definitely on our radar, but definitely also as people who were living on stolen land, unceded land, and thinking about our, I guess, position in this place, it also felt really important to think about what the country is saying and what the communities connected to this country is saying. And yeah, we're seeing lots of climate impacts and shifts in the ways that the seasons are working, and it just feels incredibly important, but particularly from a cultural lens, because lots of culture changes when country changes as well.
So there's something that particularly struck me about your coalition is that you mentioned on your website, at its core, the climate crisis is a cultural problem that requires cultural solutions. I really appreciated the emphasis on how our values influence our actions and impact our environment and each other. Can you share with us what role, skills and knowledge arts orgs and arts workers can contribute to addressing our climate crises?
Part of why we're really interested in working in the arts in terms of climate response is because we see that it's something that we practice all of the time, how our ideas form material realities. And I think climate change is a longer form, much wider practice of this. It's really tied to how many societies are, you know, constructed around extraction and domination and using nature to fuel this insatiable urge for growth and profit. And while a lot of the climate discourse is around, you know, the symptoms and the impacts and the scientific quantifications and predictions, behind that is, you know, while humankind is affecting the climate, and that has been much of the discussion around the burden of proof of that, actually behind there is the question of, like, what is creating the issue of humankind? And it's not all of humankind either. It's just a particular mindset or worldview that has created this type of shift in our world around us, and that we're feeling more and more. That's part of why we're really interested in it from a cultural perspective. But also, Elihi and I at the time, we were both working as independent producers, working with lots of arts organizations. And we really wanted to start from our circle of influence and our relationships that we had. And we had relationships with lots of organizations because we worked across them on short contracts. And so it felt like, wow, this is something that we can really have impact on from where we are.
Yeah, I felt like it made a lot of sense, just knowing your work and having worked with you in the past as well. And I guess that relates to my next question around your reach with the different organizations that you work with. So I understand that Climate for Art is not only a campaign, but that you've also formed a climate union for arts workers and arts organizations. Can you talk us through the goals and structure of the union and how you support the workers to address our climate crisis?
Yeah, definitely the first realm has been, you know, approaching and organizations approaching us to join the Climate Coalition, which means that they agree to divest their financial ties to fossil fuel funders through things like their bank. And superannuation is more, we're focusing more on an independent level because everyone has the choice to choose their own super, but there are recommended supers that organizations can shift as well. As well as looking at their power, but power is very complicated. So primarily we started with banking. And yeah, we wanted to start with an imperfect first step. We don't think divestment is the solution to the climate crisis. It's, you know, sort of a tactic of a transition economy of moving towards renewables, which allows us a little bit more organizing ground and time in terms of climate change accelerating. But again, we think that it's the cultural core is really where that system change will happen from. Yeah, so we meet with the organizations and chat through how their divestment progress is going. And often that's quite a slow, bureaucratic, boring process for them, but they don't have a lot of time to have a broader conversation, is what we've realized through the process of working with organizations, because I think many arts organizations feel very strung out with the situation they're in of finding funding every 3 or 4 years and, you know, not really having longevity or stability. So we're finding that it's quite difficult to have cultural conversations with people who are, you know, in the realm of running arts organizations. While we wanted to start that through the Climate Union, that sort of shifted in our campaign. We started to look at different ways that we can gather independence. We're working on a series of divestment dinners to bring people together to shift their superannuations and just have space to gather as a community. And we started things like reading groups. We did a reading group last year with another World Library that was all centered around the question of how does work affect the climate crisis, or our labour practices and the way that it impacts our time and our relationships. And then the symposium, I guess, is the third sort of iteration of this community building and literacy building. We were finding when we were talking to lots of arts organisations and the people within them that many of the narratives that they were talking about were inherited narratives, and narratives that are actually funded by oil industry PR campaigns. So things like, you know, plastic recycling or the carbon footprint or tracking things in a particular way have often been funded to circumnavigate the blame on corporations and industry. And we're really interested in looking at the climate through that lens, because that's where the power lies. Something that we realized doing the campaign is that climate change, because it's so existential and there has been this, I guess, discourse around it that if you have to know everything because before you can say anything. And so people are really worried about being wrong in the space or not knowing enough. And there's a lot of shame and guilt. And I think a lot of that has come from this, I guess, campaign around burden of proof of whether climate change is even real. And so, yeah, that's why we're focused on knowledge building and vocabulary building as a collective, so we start to have these conversations together.
Yes, and I think that what you said about a lot of arts organizations, because of around the nature of funding and the instability of arts at the moment as well, how that really impacts the time that people can give at the moment. But I really love that through A Climate of Art, you're making time for people through bringing people together so that they don't feel isolated, like they're just doing the work by themselves in their organization, but through the symposium or through the camp. And yeah, and so I think that that's a really great way to build more collective power, essentially. And so I guess just kind of looking back over the last 2 years, you mentioned some reflections already, but are there any other key takeaways that you've taken from the symposium, which has been pretty fresh? And yeah, where to next for A Climate of Art?
Yeah, I think a big question that came from the symposium is, what are the cultural forms that we need to have these conversations? Like, what are ways that we can also make the conversation sustainable and our work in this place, in this issue, sustainable? Because there is a lot of grief work and there's a lot of difficult terrain to work through together when trying to focus on something that feels very complicated to focus on and very difficult to focus on. And so a big question for us also has been, how do we make this process irresistible? One really beautiful thing that was said in the Talanoa by the senior Tonga who did a Tongan welcome into the space was talking about how we can have these complicated conversations, but to know that even if we disagree or if we come from different perspectives, that we're always interconnected. And the Talanoa is a, you know, form of conversation from the Pacific that holds that at the centre. So it was really beautiful to have a conversation in a more informal setting in that format. And it really, it sort of made me wonder whether a symposium format is the right type of format. And it was interesting, you know, market forces. One of the campaigns they were talking about was how they got, I think it was maybe the executive team from Santos to come to the Tiwi Islands and spend 3 days on country. And, you know, I think you can't really, sometimes these things have to be experienced in different forms to really have impact. Like, we're not really able to convey the types of conversation, the types of perspectives, or have the types of conversations we need to in these cultural formats, like a 1 hour meeting that is very time bound, but also have these certain power dynamics. And so we're going to have a dinner with some of our peers to have a collective conversation about what's next and to reflect on some of the things. And we're really excited to do that as a community of practice that we're trying to form. So that's probably the next steps. Divestment dinners, more conversations, more reading groups, and more community building so we can create a collective movement that feels beautiful to be part of, like with relationships and like a strong grounding in relationships that are generative and calm. I really wanted everyone to leave the symposium with like a calm nervous system. And so I guess that's the space that we're trying to hold, like a space away from urgency, a space that can hold creativity, away from a flight or flight response, and something that is also sustainable in the practice of doing it, as well as aiming for sustainability in a broader sense.
On Community Radio around Australia, you are listening to Women on the Line. You've been listening to us chat with Lana Wing, who is one half behind A Climate for Art, a campaign that unifies the arts around the issues of our changing climate through divestment practices and community building. On the 13th and 14th of February, A Climate for Art held a symposium bringing together arts organisations, climate action organisations and arts workers over shared time and space to learn. We now hear a snippet from Market Forces, represented by Munira Chowdhury and Rachel Deans, who presented on targeting finance as a successful action to block fossil fuel investments.
Yeah, climate change. It's not looking good, as most of you will know, and already the global temperature has risen 1.2 degrees. And, you know, when we look at these things, it's just numbers, right? But this chart here kind of tells us what the rising temperatures mean practically. So leaders have set the 1.5 degree goal. And it's so important to stick to that goal. Like even that little difference from 1.5 to 2 or more, which will happen if we keep doing the things we're doing at this moment, like at 2 degrees on average, if the temperature rises, it will be deadly to step out of the house during some summers. Like if you've been outside today, you already know what it's like on a hot day, but with a 2 degree rise on average, it's gonna be so much worse. And that's where our work comes in. So the main thing that we do, don't worry about all the wordy things there, is trying to shift finance away from fossil fuels, which is the biggest contributor to climate change, towards ones that are solutions. So renewables, technologies that are good for the environment and not causing a bunch of pollution, harming people, this world. And just a heads up, we're talking about finance today, but none of this is financial advice. Everyone has their own circumstances, so make your own decisions, consulting the experts. We're just providing you with information that you can use to make your decisions, but that's totally up to you. We're not gonna like ask you to do things financially. Anything else to add, Rach?
Oh, just introducing ourselves, but I would love to introduce Munira, who is an incredible friend and also an incredible manager of mine. But Munira has run campaigns that have stopped coal-fired power stations being built in Bangladesh, among a lot of other things. So the thing that I love about this work and about working with people like Munira is that when we work collectively together, we can see huge shifts. And it's so exciting, and it's something, you know, when we hear the news, it can be really disempowering. But the thing that I love about this work is when we come together, we can make change, and we've seen that. And we really want this to be an empowering you know, conversation about like what we can do when we create change together. Yeah. And I'm Rachel, and I'm an oil and gas campaigner at Market Forces. I've been at Market Forces for about 8.5 years. So, yeah.
Thanks for talking about collective action, because I can never claim the win myself. It was the effort of grassroots people, people in the community that were impacted, people here, people across the world. And in Japan, which was connected to the power plant. So we'll get into more of that in the coming slides. So our work follows the money, essentially. So if a coal mine is being built or a gas power plant is built, we look at where the money is coming from. So it's banks that provide the funding. It is investors that put money into the companies that are building these new coal, oil, and gas projects. And then the companies themselves that have terrible policies, do not care about climate as much as they should. And then there's the community work that we will highlight today and how we've managed to make change over time. So if we look at the next slide, there's the big four banks of Australia, Commonwealth Bank, NAB, ANZ, and Westpac. How many of us here have a bank account with one of these big four banks? It's okay to bank with them. You can tell them off, which is the fun part. So yeah, we do heaps of research, and sadly, the big four banks of Australia have played a really big role in climate change by funding fossil fuels. And they've put billions of dollars into fossil fuels. Just in the last 9 years, they've given $61 billion. Like, that's just so hard to imagine when you think of what a big number it is. And so what we do is we look at all the banks that are active in Australia and do the research on which banks are providing money to fossil fuels and which banks are not. So if we've got on our website a compare banks table where you can look at how your bank is doing. And if they're doing great, you can thank them. And if they're not doing great, you can tell them off. You can put them on notice and tell them, hey, I'm really unhappy with what you're doing with my money. Because ultimately, the banks have our money, and that's what they use to invest in these companies. So we have a say on what our money is used for. And the hypocrisy is that all these banks publicly have said, we really care about climate change. You know, 1.5 degree target is really important to us. And that's what we're aiming for. But when we look at the action and what they're actually doing, it's really different. But like we said, there are wins and there are beautiful stories to tell. And Rach, do you want to share about CommBank?
So in 2018, Commonwealth Bank was the worst out of the big four for funding companies expanding fossil fuels, so new coal, oil and gas projects. They poured $6 billion into it just in that year. Lots of people, lots of customers, shareholders, staff members of the banks started taking action. So they would come together, they would send emails to Commonwealth Bank. One of the, a shareholder sued Commonwealth Bank. Like, there was a whole lot of collective action. And as a result of that, last year, Commonwealth Bank came out with the most progressive policy related to climate change, completely changed within a short space of time, and ruled out companies like Woodside and Santos, Australia's biggest oil and gas companies. Now, these are relationships that the bank have had with these clients for a really long time. And it's this collective action, it's people coming together that has severed those ties, because people have said our climate is more important than your relationship with these fossil fuel funders. Our climate and our money, we don't want it spent on this, we want it spent on other things. So I think it's a really exciting story because, you know, $6 billion is a lot of money. And there are still some things that Commonwealth has to do. Like, it's not perfect, but it is an incredible policy relative and has been kind of touted globally as something that banks should look up to and do. So very exciting story, and thank you to any bank customers or shareholders or people that were involved in that win.
And it's not just Commonwealth Bank's one policy. The other banks as well, just 4 or 5 years ago, were funding coal, and now almost all of them have some forms of restriction around coal lending. So we have to keep the pressure up. It's working, and the banks really care about their reputation. They really care about what customers say. So that kind of pressure works very well.
And just to say, like, it's a bit of a domino effect in the finance industry. The banks and superannuation funds, they don't want to be the first to do something, but they also don't want to be the last. So the fact that we've got Commonwealth Bank, which is the largest Australian bank, coming out and doing this, it makes it a lot easier for us to get Westpac, NAB and ANZ to do the same.
And so the first things to do is putting the bank on notice and then, you know, escalating it in some way. You can go to your local bank manager and tell them, hey, I'm really unhappy with my bank funding fossil fuels. And then the next step people can do is switch their bank to one that's more ethical. So banks that really care about climate and don't invest in fossil fuels. And more important than moving your savings or your money to these ethical banks is making a noise about it. So post on social media, tell your friends and family. Like, think of this room. It could, I mean, cost of living, I'm broke, but this room could have hundreds and thousands of dollars potential to be moved to an ethical bank away from fossil fuels. So there's lots we can do when we come together.
And you just heard from Market Forces, represented by Munira Chowdhury and Rachel Deans, who presented on targeting finance as a successful action to blocking fossil fuel investments. You can listen to the entire talk alongside other insightful presentations on the arts and climate action via aclimateforart.com.au. And that's all for Women on the Line today. Earlier on the show, we spoke with Lana Wing, who is an independent curator, arts worker and cultural organizer on projects that engage with the politics of place. Lana is one half, alongside Aliki Reed, behind A Climate for Art, a campaign that unifies the arts around the issues of our changing climate through divestment practices and community building. You can follow A Climate for Art on Instagram for updates. Thanks to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support. The theme music for Women on the Line is by Ripley Kavara. I'm Senya, and tune in to Women on the Line next week on your local community radio station.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au.